cops come out and they're like, down on your knees, sir. And they like put you, and grandpa.
I'm Joe Rogan's guy.
Oh, wow. That is quite the declaration there. I cannot even believe you said that.
They're saying it's so much better for you. It's good for the environment. It's good for this and that.
And then you die.
Speaking of which, Epstein, you know, should we dive into this Jewish supremacy for a few minutes before we end the show? You have weird rules about germs, I realize.
Well, I need a straw for this drink because it would make my teeth dark on the podcast otherwise.
Oh, okay. Well, we got a great show. We got a lot of stuff to cover, some interesting things, some controversial things.
I cannot wait. I'm so excited to get into these things with you.
Yeah, so I guess first off, where do we want to start? Do we want to talk about how maybe like the Ivan is Hitler? Is that where we want to go?
The what?
Well, no, the overall general topic is like there's a lot of people out there now pushing back on the Rogan sphere, saying the Rogan sphere is declining and they don't know what they're talking about anymore. And okay. I feel like I'm one of those people, you know, I'm not in the Rogan sphere because I'm not a comedian, but I feel like I'm sort of in that space, right? That's kind of my realm. That's like my world a little bit. Like yeah. I'm Joe Rogan's guy, you know?
Oh, wow. That is quite the declaration there. I cannot even believe you said that. And now you're going to talk about his decline.
Well, no, we're going to discuss.
Kind of you.
We're going to talk about because there is pushback now. Maybe we should just start with that clip from Marc Maron.
Sure.
And see what he says here.
Okay.
I think if Hitler were alive today, he'd probably appear on Theo Von's podcast. And Theo would be like, see, y'all did a lot of meth, right? I mean, all the Nazis were all fucked up on meth, right, Hitler? That shit'll make you crazy, dog. I did some meth once. I was up for 3 days, and then I ate a live bird. No shit, Hitler, a live bird, bro. Hey, Hitler, you probably didn't even hate the Jews. That was just the meth making you crazy, dog. Hey, Hitler. Do you want to apologize to all the Jews right now on my show? No? I get it.
All right, funny or not funny?
Not funny. I think
that... Because you like this guy, right? Don't you like this guy?
I like him on Sticks. I like him on the HBO show. He needs to stick to acting. I think he's a horrible comedian. And I think that he named his HBO special Panicked because that's exactly what the Dems feel right now because they have nobody running... a real contender running for president in 2028, and they're panicked. They're trying to figure out how can we shit on these comedians and these podcasters. They're still trying to figure out why they lost the election, and they're blaming it on Joe Rogan and Theo Von. But the reality is that him trying to impersonate Theo Von was probably the funniest part of his whole entire...
I thought it was a pretty good impression of Theo Von.
You did?
I thought it was decently good.
Oh, my
good.
God. It was horrible. I watched that, and I think, and maybe it's you, I don't know. I think... Who thinks that's funny?
Obviously, the crowd there. But no, okay, so my feeling on that is I don't have the same opinion as that, in that I think Theo Von should be able to interview whoever.
Well, he's saying that basically Trump is Hitler of our era, right? That's what he's trying to draw the correlation between. And that Theo interviewed the Hitler of our time by doing that President Trump interview during the election.
I mean, so I think there is some fair criticism to say if you interview these people, do you have to ask some real questions or no?
Okay.
So for example, like if you're interviewing Hitler, it's not like you can't, but in 1942, if you were to do that, would you go to him and say, well, what's your plan with all the Jews here? Like, I really want, you know, just lay it out for us. And then in 2025, you know, before the election of 2024, when he interviewed Donald Trump, I would probably ask him. I mean, I would shoot the shit with him, but I would also ask him real questions to say, like, hey, you just took like $100 million from Miriam Adelson. Like, are we Israel's bitch? What is this?
Yeah, I feel like if you're going to have that standard, then you should also have it for Kamala Harris, who was running, and Joe Biden, who was running. And, you know, there were no Barbara Walters interviews going on with either of them. They were getting, you know, call her daddy.
100%.
Pre-cut
yes.
interviews. So I just think what's going on right now is you have an attack right now on Joe Rogan. You have an attack right now on the podcast comedian world because the liberals are so discombobulated trying to figure out how did Trump win the election? Oh my God, we need a Democrat Joe Rogan. That's what they've been saying. We need a, some of these comedians. Gavin Newsom, their best shot at winning the presidential election in 2028 is going on Sean Ryan and all these conservative podcasts already trying to make his way into that sphere. The reality is that they're so disconnected with reality. They think that it's Joe Rogan and all these podcast comedians' fault or reason why Trump won the election. That's not why they won the election.
I agree with you. I don't think it's the podcast bros that won Trump the election. I think the vibes were already there. The podcast bros are just there to kind of be a part of that.
Yeah, like you could make a way better argument that RFK Jr. joining Trump won him the election.
No, there's actually like electoral, you know, data to suggest that.
Yeah, and so Harris had that opportunity. Biden had that opportunity, and they pushed RFK Jr. to the side. So I just think it's funny that these liberal comedians and actors are coming out doing stand-up specials when they're not funny at all, trying to shit on actual comedians that are funny, like Theo Vaughn.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's a little bit of what happens when, because I think comedians, I generally view them as like anti-establishment, right? The comedian's job is to like make fun of people in power and poke fun at people who you normally can't joke about.
Yeah.
And so then what happens when like the anti-establishment crowd or a large percentage of them become part of the establishment?
Mm-hmm.
That is like the big question. I think they're grappling. I think they're figuring it out. I'm not saying that they're doing a bad job. I think they're kind of in this space of like, okay, now Trump is in power. What do we do? Do we still be buddy buddies with him? Is that our job, is to like then interview these guys like Theo Vaughn sat down with Sam Altman? But to give Theo Vaughn credit, he's sitting down with everybody.
Yeah,
he's not
for sure
exclusive in that nature. And so it's the same with Joe Rogan. But I think there's like a different critique when it comes to like journalism critique versus comedic critique.
Right.
And it's like, so what do? You want to continue to cozy up to them? Is that what you want? Or is it now time to like punch up again at some of these guys that are in power? Like Dave Chappelle is a good example. I feel like Dave Chappelle
favorite comedian.
Yeah, he just critiques everybody. Like when you know, for example, a few years ago, like I don't want to say like the trans people were in power, but there was a lot of like
wow, that's a clip.
I don't want to say they're not in power, but you know, they had a lot of like social cred, and it's
yes.
like, hey, if you say anything that's anti-trans, you're basically a huge bigot and this and that.
Yeah.
And Chappelle came out against that. But then now Chappelle's like, hey man, you know, I don't want to say the joke because I'll be canceled. Only Chappelle can say it, but
right.
it's about a certain group of people. Like he can make those jokes on SNL, but we can't. But my point is that he continuously punches up, and the decision that they have to make is, do they want to become part of the establishment or do they want to kind of still be comedians?
Yeah, I mean, I think they are, if you're talking about like the Rogan crowd, I think
yeah.
they are still comedians and they've had critiques. Like Theo Vaughn has been very critical of what's
Israel.
Going on in Gaza, and
yeah.
Joe Rogan has been very critical about what's going on with ICE. But I just think that these liberal leading comedians are trying so hard to be the next Joe Rogan, and they just don't have it. They don't. And, you know, his comedy special might be getting, you know, some buzz about it. But if you look at the actual ratings on Rotten Tomatoes, it has like a 6.8. People don't think it's funny. Like, he needs to stick to sticks and being the caddy and just call it quits with his stand-up because it's just not funny.
I haven't seen that stand-up. Other than that clip, I don't know what the rest of the stand-up sounds like.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to hold my opinion on that. But
I listen to 5 minutes and I'm like, can't do it. Not good.
Yeah. And I'm trying to take my cues from, like, other comedians in this space where some of the Austin guys are getting roasted a little bit. I don't know if you've seen those clips.
No.
Like, can you play, LJ, can you play the Bobby Lee one, which is E2?
I'm tired of the attitude.
I thought you were going to say violence in this country.
No. I'm tired. They come up back to L.A. One guy, I want to name his name, I go, oh, you seem like you're thriving. And he goes, I'm killing it. And I'm like, whoa, dude.
You moved
out because you couldn't survive here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is a different.
It's an animal.
Okay, so I was doing some digging
yes.
about who he might be referring to. And
yeah.
the general consensus is it's Tony Hinchcliffe. And that's who you saw last week when you were in Austin.
Yeah, I saw him last week. And I find that, first of all, I love Bobby Lee. I think he's hilarious, mostly because I love Theo Vaughn. And so
their dynamic is awesome.
It's amazing. It's so funny. Like, there's so many hilarious moments from that. But I do think it's kind of funny that they're saying that they're kind of like shitting on him because he had to, like, insinuating he had to move to Austin to make it. And that, like, L.A. is its own beast. Because the reality is, in the comedy world, is that L.A. is, like, the Facebook to the TikTok, right? Like,
you're saying Austin is TikTok and yes, L.A. is Facebook.
Like, L.A., the L.A. comedy scene is dying. All of the new upcoming comedians are going to Austin. They're following Joe Rogan. They're going to the mothership. That's where, like, the mecca of comedy in the world is happening.
Is that
right
true?
Now.
I'm not sure. We got to talk to. We're gonna talk to a comedian in a couple days. I want to ask him.
Yeah, I mean, that's just what I've been told and what I heard. And when I was in Austin at the mothership, it is really like where all the comedians are moving. I talked to some of them at the show, and it's just interesting that they would say that, because yes, I think LA is its own beast. I think LA is like, can you do woke comedy? But is that what people want to watch and listen to anymore? I would say no.
I don't know. I think what do you mean by woke comedy? What is woke
comedy? I mean, like,
comedy?
You have to be censored if you're going to do a comedy show in LA at the Laugh Factory now.
Is that true? Because I was at a Comedy Store show last year, and I didn't think it was woke at all.
Well, that's good. But
it was actually anti-woke. In fact, they were going after all kinds of people.
Good. I mean, that's what I think.
And the people in the audience were very, very uncomfortable.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean, right? Like, you're not going to get the laughs that maybe the rest of the country or the rest of the world would give you in LA, because the culture and society in LA is so woke. That's my point. Where in Austin, if you're making fun of people or different things that are uncomfortable, you're going to get the laugh. And I saw that because I went to a Kill Tony show, and they are brutal there. And everybody is hysterically laughing. Like, they make fun of everybody. They make fun of, you know, there's no censorship there. Put it that way.
Interesting. Because I think the critique of Tony is that he just says, like, the most outrageous shit. And it's not necessarily funny. It's just outrageous. That's the critique.
It's funny, though. I was there.
Like, when he's like the famous Puerto Rico joke.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I think every comedian doesn't hit 100% of the time.
And do you think that joke hit or not?
Obviously, it didn't, right?
Well, I don't know. It didn't hit for the left. I don't know if it hit for the right.
It didn't hit in Madison Square Garden with all MAGA supporters.
Because I didn't think they understood, because it's not really a joke. It's just saying, oh, Puerto Rico sucks.
Well, and then the media.
So you don't even say why it sucks.
Yeah, I mean. And he was talking about, like, the Pacific Island, you know, garbage island and stuff. Look, I don't think he hit on that joke. I think it was a bad joke. And, you know, it got publicized. And, you know, that's the only joke you heard from his set, because the left media was like, these are the people that Trump is, you know, aligning with. These horrible people saying this about Puerto Rican. They're against Puerto Ricans. You know, it became this other thing. But in terms of, is Tony Hinchcliffe funny? I mean, did you watch the roast on Tom Brady? I mean.
No, that was epic.
He
probably was maybe number two compared to, what's that other chick's name? Nikki Glaser.
Yeah.
Nikki Glaser, I thought, was like the top.
They were amazing. Like, it was so funny. So, look, maybe he's
although,
not.
There is Tony Hinchcliffe was just, there's a clip that I, it's Element E, F2, and he's being roasted by the country club adjacent guys. Do you know? It's like a golf roast channel.
Okay, no.
There's like a very, like 30 seconds of that, first 30 seconds, and he's getting roasted by the golf adjacent guys, which I thought, you know, I think you gotta.
Well, of course, if you're a comedian, you have to be able to.
Take some as well.
Yeah, dish it and take it.
Dude, to have a $5 million home off the backs of open micers is the greatest achievement in human history. There's nothing better than that. To watch Casey Rocket sweat so he can buy a second lake house is brilliant.
Okay, you pause.
But he's laughing at that. Like, I think that's great. And that's true. You know what I mean? Like, that's hilarious.
Yeah, I don't agree with the sentiment that, like, the Rogan sphere is declining and dying.
No, I don't think it is. I think that's the message that the left wants to put out there. But I don't think that it's dying at all.
I don't think it's dying. But I do think that there is a comedic decision that they have to make going forward to say, hey, do we still go with the anti-woke jokes? Because the anti-woke jokes, I think, are funny when, like, the woke crowd was in power, when, like, Biden was in power with Kamala and you couldn't say anything. It was, like, very censorious. about those specific topics, then I think it works really well. But now it's the dynamic has shifted, like who is in power. So then do you still continue with those jokes, or now do you go and make fun of people like Ben Shapiro who are like, oh, Jews need safe spaces on campus and this and that? Like, that starts to get look kind of ridiculous. And that's, if I were a comedian, which I'm not, that's where I would shift
a little bit of my material. Entertainment, you have to keep up with the times or you're going to be stale and it's going to be old. So if they're going to continue to stay at the top, then they're going to have to be able to adapt to the times and make fun of, you know, and make light of or whatever they're going to do in their own way with whatever's happening now. Because, yeah, you're right. There is still the woke stuff going on. But with Trump in power being anti-woke, that's not really the forefront of what's funny. I mean, I still think it's funny, to be honest. But I see what you're saying. To your point, I think they will have to shift a little bit. And I think that good comedians will.
And you're starting to see them shift. Like, it's not, like, I think some of the critique here against these guys is unfair because they are shifting. Like, you could see the material changing, like Shane Gillis with his monologue at the ESPYs. I thought was really good, right? He went after the WNBA, but he also went after Epstein. So, like, everybody's on the table. And that's ultimately what you want in a comedian is, like, everybody should be on the chopping block to be made fun of.
But, like, just to be clear, those guys are not going anywhere. They're super popular.
No.
The Kill Tony tickets that my friend got, only 3% of people in the queue waiting got them, and 3 months of his show's tickets sold out in less than a minute.
Yeah.
So the demand for that type of comedy where you are just making jokes that most people think but don't say, and by the way, he's so quick, the things that he says, he's a talented guy. And you got to give him credit. He was working the door at the Laugh Factory and the Comedy Store in LA. He has been in this business for a long time and worked his way up. So you got to love to see that, someone be successful. And then also bringing up other comedians, that's the whole premise of his show. So that's my take on that.
Yeah, no, I'm sort of halfway there with you. And I agree, like, I don't think these guys are going anywhere. I think these guys are really funny.
And Mark is not replacing one of them. Bomb Comedy Hour. I saw the first 5 minutes, panicked.
Who?
Mark, the Sticks actor.
Oh, Mark Maron.
Mark Maron, great actor on Sticks. Stick with being a caddy. That's what I have to say.
I think there is a big. I think when you try to, like, I think comedy is not meant to be like, the material is not meant to like make everybody feel good, right? It's not meant to like make sure like people, we can't make fun of certain people. Like, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
That good.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be willing to go there, but it's like, depending
on... For sure, and there's just some things that are funny and some things that aren't, and him impersonating Theo and fake interviewing Hitler, to me, flop.
Yeah. What I would consider is when you are close to, like, someone in power, you have to kind of be careful of your image. Because I found it incredibly cringe back in the days when, you know, the left-wing comedians were like, cozying up to Obama. Do you remember those, like, kind of the Daily Show kind of crowd in there? You know, I think it's really cringe. And now with the same with Trump being the president, I think if you just try to curry favor with Trump, to me, it seems cringe.
Yeah, for sure. There's like, a fine line there.
You know?
Of course.
Because he's the president. You should make fun of the president. Always.
I mean.
Speaking of which, okay, so this is going to be sort of a more serious turn from the comedic topic. But 401ks. A little executive order, quite a big executive order, I think, in terms of policy changes. So Trump last week just signed an executive order that gives 401ks the ability to invest in alternative assets. That includes crypto, that includes private equity, includes all a bunch of other stuff. And I'm alarmed. You seem less alarmed by that, but I'm not a big fan of this move. Before I get into all the nitty gritty about why I think it's not a good move.
Yeah.
You want anything to sound off on before I get into the details?
I think that your take is going to be a panicking take. Mm. And so I'll sound off after you get into your thing.
Okay. All right. So I think my main worry is not, I mean, the crypto thing, like, do I care, not care? I think we don't really know what's going to happen with the crypto.
Yeah.
But like, one thing that I am very sure of is that this right here is a move to bail out private equity. Because they've been wanting this for a long time. They've been wanting access to 401ks for a long time.
Okay.
Because there's, I think, more than 10, I think $12 trillion sitting in 401k accounts.
Yeah, I think it's like $12
trillion. So they've been wanting this access for a long time. And with private equity, I think there's a bit of a situation right now, and I'm going to try to break this down in a way that people can understand, because I think private equity is somewhat complicated. But in essence, their fund, they pool money, and they're going to buy other companies and then also then sell these companies.
Just happened with Phil's Coffee.
Yeah, but the thing is, they're not going to hold Phil's forever. They're going to try to do some things to increase the value of Phil's, and then they're going to sell it off. So here's the issue right now. So if you pull up C4, this is from Bain, and this is their analysis of current private equity holdings. So it's at the highest level of unsold assets in history, meaning that there's a lot of companies, portfolio companies that private equity has purchased, and it's just sitting there.
It's almost like the real estate market, right? A lot of people bought up a bunch of real estate in 2020 through 2023, 2024, and now they're trying to sell it, and they can't because there's no buyers and the economy is just not there.
And the valuation is very, very high.
Yes.
Because whenever they sell to each other, the valuation has to go up because They're not going to lose money. Now, the other interesting aspect of this on the flip side is that private equity dry powder, or age dry powder, meaning dry powder is basically the money that they've allocated in these funds that they're contractually obligated to deploy. They must invest it somewhere.
Got it.
These funds are also at an all-time high.
So they have a ton of money to invest in more companies.
They have a ton of companies that they need to offload.
Okay.
But there are no deals.
Okay.
Which means that there's something wrong with the valuation. Because you have a lot of money to spend. You have a lot of, you know, you also have the other side, a lot of things to sell, but they're not transacting.
Okay.
So that introduces element E4.
And can I just ask,
yeah,
are they not selling because of what's going on in the economy? Like, why aren't they able to sell these companies?
Because my hypothesis is that the valuation is too high. The companies are not worth what they're saying. Because what's happening is these are companies that say, hey, we're buying in and it's being valued at a certain amount, like whatever, 100 million, 200 million, whatever they say it's worth, that's it. There's no like market analysis. This is not like the public market where you IPO and the market kind of gets to decide the price of the share. These are things that are opaque. We don't even know how the company's doing.
So what happens if they don't sell these assets? They just hold them.
You have to. You're contractually obligated to sell. There's a time horizon in these funds.
Oh, there's a timeline.
There's a time horizon for the
fund. So then they will just have to sell for less.
Yes, but they don't want to.
Right.
Yes, that is a distinct part. At the end of the horizon, they have to offload it somewhere. And that's what Harvard and Yale, they're big endowments, and they've been in private equity for a long time, and they are selling their stakes in their private equity funds at a discount.
Okay.
Which is also somewhat of a concerning sign as well.
Okay.
When some of your, you know, historical investors are now saying, we want out of this.
Okay.
And the solution seems to be this situation. So Harvard and Yale, right, as I just mentioned, their holdings go on sale. And buyers can use this technique for 1,000% windfalls. So this is the new stuff that they're marketing with the 401ks. They're saying, hey, you can buy these private equity holdings and you can make 1,000% return.
Yeah.
No. Not yeah. No, these are, it's not.
Well, no, that's what they're saying. There's a couple headlines like this.
Yeah. And this is for the retail to say, oh, this is a great opportunity. Now they're opening this private equity opportunity to us retailers, and we can also get in on the action. But if they had the 1,000% returns, they would not share it with the retailers. They would just transact.
Right.
Because like I said, there's more than enough money to invest, and there are a ton of companies that they need to sell.
And so you are basically worried that President Trump is signing this executive order to allow regular folks to be able to invest their 401ks into private equity. The private equity is going to go bust and the people in America are going to be the ones holding the bag.
Correct.
Okay. And I'll tell you why I think that is a very far-fetched, fear-mongering perspective.
Okay, go for it.
First of all, when it comes to 401ks, nobody's forcing anybody to invest in anything. In fact, you can just have your retirement funds to sit You don't have to invest in anything. You could also invest
in... No, but nobody's having them sit, though.
No, there Everybody are. There are. There's like 5% that let them sit, and then there's like another 12% that invest in DCs, or I'm sorry, CDs, very, very low risk options. And then also, these are alternative investments, right? The crypto and the private equity. So first of all, when you go through like a Fidelity, for example, the company that has the largest share of 401ks, that manages the largest share of 401ks, their advice to their, you know, to the employees of these companies that they represent is to only allocate between 5 and 15% in alternative assets. So you're not going to have a situation where even if somebody is going to invest in private equity, where unless it's their own decision, hey, I want to put everything in, where they're not going to be advised to only put 5 and 10%. But even the bigger situation here is that for this to roll out on the big screen, this is not a flip of the switch situation, right? First of all, in order for employees to even be able to invest in private equity, first, the employers, the companies, each individual company is going to have to vote to allow private equity to be in their options for the employees to trade in with their 401ks.
Well, thus those articles, right? They're like,
but I'm just
they're writing positive articles saying, hey, no, we want this
option. They're saying positive articles, but a lot of companies are probably going to have to go through boards. They're going to have to go through votes. Then it's going to go down to Fidelity. Fidelity is not going to be the one holding the bag or, you know, have articles written up that we allowed all of our clients to invest in this very risky.
Well, tell that to the 2008, the bankers who are, you know, telling all their clients to buy into all of these mortgage-backed securities.
I think we learned from that time. And at the end of the day, it is going to be an individual decision. Do I think that it does set up a potential situation where regular average Americans could get rug pulled, right? Where they invest in a crypto, a meme coin, and then the rug's pulled out from under them and they lost their money. Yes, but at the end of the day, that's going to be an individual decision. Nobody's being mandated to invest in private equity.
Nobody's being mandated, but they're incentivized to do so.
Why?
Because the fund managers, they 401ks aren't like big money makers for the fund managers because their fee is very, very small.
Okay.
The private equity fee structure is very different. They have like the 2 and 20 structure where you get 2% of all the money and then 20% of all the gains, right? And so fund managers are going to be able to make more money. I'm sure private equity is like, hey, if you slip some of this into the portfolio, you're going to be able to make more money. So like, yes, they're going to push that on their clients to say, yeah, you want some allocation in this.
I mean, sure,
so even if you take 5-10%.
Short term, maybe, but I think the people that want to be in the business for a long time aren't going to be like, I'm going to get rich in 1 year and then lose all my clients.
Well, no.
That's foolish.
Yes, but that's how people behave, though, right?
I mean, people.
We wouldn't have any market crashes if everybody acted in that way. There would be no, like, realtors, like, pushing things, you know, all of these adjustable rate loans on their clients back in the days. If they say that, oh, long run, like, this is going to look really bad for you, they don't care. They're going to make the money now.
Yeah. I just think that this is something that is going to take a long time to implement. It's not a flick of the switch.
No.
And a lot of times, presidents sign executive orders that go nowhere. You'd have to have Fidelity and these big money management firms say, yes, we want in on this. Then you'd have to go company by company. Those companies would then have to say, yes, I want my employees to be able to invest in these private equity stocks or crypto, whatever it may be. You're going to have to go through that process. Then each individual employee is going to have to go to their money manager and say, I want to do this. They're going to then be advised, well, you should probably only do about 5%. So I just don't think it's going to be a situation where, yes, could it be a situation where everybody in America invests their $12 trillion to save out private equity and then everybody's, you know, screwed? Sure. But I think more likely this is just an option for some people, and maybe it's more on the crypto side than the private equity side to get more people to invest in crypto. But I don't think it's going to be a situation where Americans are completely screwed because private equity is going to pop. I think that it could. I think the bubble could pop, and what you're saying is true. But I don't think that it's going to be this like rush of Americans investing in it. There's just too many guardrails for that.
I think you might be right that it's not going to be an immediate collapse because all these companies, they're not going to collapse immediately, right? Because these are opaque. We don't really even know what's going on with these companies. So it's going to be like 5, 7, 10 years later that we know, oh, something is like really, really wrong here. Right now, we're just seeing the indicators of something being wrong, but we don't know for sure.
Yeah.
And to your point, like no, there's going to be guardrails in place.
But a lot.
Where I'm coming from is like the only reason this exists, this new executive order passed is or it was signed is because private equity lobbied Trump for it. It's not the consumers. It's not the people with the 401k saying, oh, we want this. We want this. Give it to us.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is the intent is nefarious. Whether or not it's going to collapse everything, you might be right in that maybe it's not going to be an immediate rug pull situation, but the intent is nefarious.
Yeah, it may be. But also, if you look at it on the flip side, too, in there's a lot of people making a lot of money in crypto. And Bitcoin, for example, is something that people invest in to go against inflation, right? And they've made a lot of money in Bitcoin. So it also could, for people that want to take a little bit more risky of a route, it could allow people to make money in crypto or potentially private equity if they invest correctly. But I just think that it's not a situation that is going to happen overnight. I think that there is a lot of process that is involved in getting it to even a point where employees might even be able to invest in private equity. And then at that point, I think they're probably going to be advised strongly. This is a risk, a high risk alternative option. And so if you want to go down that road, you know, just be aware you could lose this portion of your 401k. Versus if you invest in these more conservative avenues, you will make 2-3% a year like CDs.
I think it all comes down to disclosure and how they roll this out, right? If they say, hey, you're opening up to private equity, to crypto, there's risk involved, just so you're aware, and people still do it, then that's on them, right? I'm a big fan of, you know, just informed consent. This is one of those things. But if it's one of those things that they hide into these like target funds, right? If you, because a lot of times you go into your 401k, like, oh, how much return do you want? And there's like a target date. It's like, I want to make X money by this date.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, well, I want to make 9-10% return every year until this date. Then most people aren't like looking into the nitty gritty details of like what is in this bucket of things. So what is in this basket of stuff?
Well, and I think you also have to put that on the individual person.
Mm.
I think that if you are going to have money invested for your retirement in this life, it is not easy. So if you want to get ahead, you're not going to have somebody holding your hand all the time. You're going to have to sit down, learn, read the paper, read the disclosures, and make sure that you're making financially secure decisions with your money.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, I agree with you in the general sense. Like, you need to take responsibility. You have agency. You can't just be like, I was fooled.
Nobody's forcing. There's no mandate here forcing people that they have to invest in crypto and private equity. But now it is an option on the table.
Yes. And I think people make poor financial decisions. I mean, like, I do kind of share that feeling, too, when people were saying, hey, Trump, you know, rug pulled a bunch of people with his meme coin and things like that.
Exactly.
And I'm like, I would never put my money into that.
I missed the boat. I wish I would have got in.
Well, you would have lost a lot of things.
If I would have got in and got out, people made a lot of money.
Well, but you would never be able to time it. As a retail, you're not an insider. You wouldn't be able to time it properly.
Look.
You're saying you could have gone in, gone out.
Well, there was like a 24-hour period there where I was like, holy shit, I really missed the boat. But yeah, I agree with you. Like, it is concerning. People could get rug pulled and it could be a situation set up for sitting lambs. But at the end of the day, you have to be able to take ownership over your own money and read the fine print, right? So
you got to read the fine print, but I think there is an incentive for these corporations to manipulate the fine print, to trick you with articles and, oh, you're going to miss this great opportunity. And people get emotional about things. And the same, I think, with food, right? That's a lot of things that we talk about and we're going to talk about in a second here with, like, they're creating all this, you know, artificial things and they're saying it's so much better for you. It's good for the environment. It's good for this and that.
And then you die. Don't,
exactly. So I think there's some similarity in that there's incentive to mislead the consumer.
For sure. And I just think that those articles are probably going to be pushed out and sponsored by private equity and not so much by the money management institutions because it's more valuable for them to keep their clients.
You could be right about that. The incentives are a little bit different.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
So speaking of food, We can click on the carbon butter. Bill Gates is now behind yet another experimental food. He's done lab-grown beef. He's done the appeal coating. He has his own GMO seeds. He's buying up our water. Why? I have no idea. But now he's created butter.
You control the food. You control the people.
Exactly. Now he's created a butter called carbon butter. Yum. Doesn't that sound good?
Well, let's see.
It looks, smells, and tastes like the butter we're all familiar with, but without the farmland, fertilizers, or emissions tied to that typical process. And this butter breakthrough, it's happening right here in Batavia.
Yummy.
What is it?
In the middle of an industrial park in a suburb west of Chicago, something unprecedented is happening.
So you're using this gas right now to like cook your food. And we're proposing that we would like to first make your food with that gas.
The company is called Savor, and you better believe it. Their pioneering tech uses carbon and hydrogen to make the stick of butter you see on this plate.
This is pretty novel to be able to make food that looks and tastes and feels exactly like dairy butter, but with no agriculture whatsoever.
And no long ingredient list the average person can't pronounce.
It's really just our fat, some water, a little bit of lecithin as an emulsifier, and
that's enough. How? I mean,
I didn't understand. I mean, they said there's no ingredients that I wouldn't know, and they just named like two or three there. I don't know what that is.
But also, like, who wants to eat food that is created with like an experiment? All like you see of that industrial warehouse, they're like, it's so great for climate change. Like, we don't have to use anything real. Like, what is going on?
I have to, that's the first I've seen this carbon butter. I would like to know what's in it because I'm like, butter is like animal fat, right?
Yeah.
So how do you create animal fat from gas? That's my, because they're saying it's carbon butter.
Right.
What is that all about?
I mean, exactly. Bottom line is.
And who is it for? Is Bill Gates going to eat it? Is he going to be serving his kids and his grandkids
Bill
carbon
Gates,
butter?
The guy that says we need to make sure that we have climate change passports in the future to make sure you're not flying around too much. But then when he's asked about flying around on his private jet, he's like, well, I'm doing enough for the world. It's fine.
Yeah, I'll eat if he eats. It's like, you know, Obama back in the days when he was in Flint, Michigan with the water.
No.
You didn't see? That's a super famous clip when he's like, he's like, the water's good. It's totally fine. He like touches his lips maybe for a split second. And then
I think actually Kim Kardashian did a ad for one of Bill Gates' lab grown meat or lab grown chicken companies. And she did the same thing. Like the whole ad is like her with a burger and she's like, yum. Yeah. And then it just she puts it down. And I just feel like all of these climate change activists are coming up with solutions using chemicals to make food, but they're not coming up with ways to make sure that we're treating our animals better, our crops better, our soil better, and producing organic food, right? Like Bill Gates is notoriously known for creating, he calls them his magic seeds. They're his own GMO seeds. And when he went around buying up all the farmland in 2020 and 2021, I think he owns 243,000 acres of privately owned farmland in the United States. He's the largest individual owner of farmland in the United States. When he did that, what he was doing is he was going to a lot of these farmers and he was saying, we're going to keep your rent the same. This is going to be great. Just keep doing what you're doing. And then a year later, a lot of these farmers reported that he was going back to them and he was saying, hey, this is the deal now. You're either going to use my seeds and we're going to keep your rent the same, or we're going to double your rent and you can keep growing organic. So he has changed a lot of these private farmers now from going organic to now growing GMO seeds, his GMO seeds. So it's just very bizarre whenever he's involved in something because it's always a science project. And the guy doesn't have a science background. The guy doesn't have a medical degree, but we're listening to him on what to do with the vaccines and what food to eat. And it's just so bizarre.
Well, he's a pirate, right? That's his.
Ooh, I like that.
That's what people called him back in the days in Silicon Valley because he never invented anything. He just stole things from other companies and then repackaged it. So in that way, I think what he's doing is like he's identifying something legitimate, which is like, hey, we want the earth to be around for a long time. We need to be mindful of how we use it. But then he creates these businesses on the side that says that's he calls the solution. And then he goes to everybody and then he, you know, basically raids their farm and says, you need to do this or else, or else.
And now I'm going to create carbon butter. I mean, I just feel like he doesn't really care.
No.
And if he did care, he wouldn't be flying his private jet all over the place. You know, with
he wouldn't be hanging out with Epstein.
I mean, that, right? And yet he's doing all of these things. And then he seems to be producing food and buying up the water rights that are associated with his land in bed with the WEF, the World Economic Forum, who is the creator of the 15-minute city and 2030 agenda and New World Order. And it feels like he's putting out products to kill people.
I don't know if he's deliberately killing people.
I do.
But he certainly doesn't care if that's an unfortunate byproduct of what's happening.
No, he's all about making money. Like, he was pushing the vaccines, but then we find out after the fact that he actually had invested in a bunch of the vaccine companies and made, like, millions of dollars in profits at that time. It's kind of like Congress.
And so you have
stocks.
To untangle this. And this is the problem, I think, now with RFK Jr. Because, I'm open about this. Like, I like RFK Jr.
Love.
I don't think he's always 100% right on everything, but I think he has good intent.
For sure.
But the problem is none of these corporations are going to actually let RFK Jr. do what he wants to do. And maybe that's what he's there for, right? Because I said this in the last episode. Maybe he's just there as a figurehead so people like me, people like you can feel like something is happening, but not that much is going to be happening.
I mean, I do feel like there has been some real positive change that RFK Jr. has made, just getting like food dyes out of our food. Companies have already proactively started doing this, getting certain ingredients like canola oil out of food, fast food chains, things like that. So there has been some change that he's made. And then also like looking into, for example, the hepatitis B vaccine and doing alternative research and really, you know, blowing the whistle on the fact that the CDC never, you know, actually hid information that the hepatitis B vaccine might be causing harm to our children. I think that he is doing some good, but I also agree with you that he's fighting against a lot of corporate interest power, and that's going to be an uphill battle, for
sure. Like with the glyphosate stuff, there should be no reason why these companies 100%. Should be getting immunity from lawsuits.
And there's no reason we should be eating carbon butter.
And I don't think that's going to work. I don't think that's going to take off.
But what's so crazy is that that's not the only lab thing that's being created right now. You also have, if we just want to play like 30 seconds of this clip, this is being served right now in San Francisco. This is lab-grown salmon, not farm salmon. Like, I get worried about it. I go and I'm like, is it farmed? And they're like, yes. I'm like, no, thank you. I'll take the salad or whatever.
Yeah.
This is just lab-grown.
Wild type salmon.
It's lunchtime at the San Francisco headquarters of Wild Type, and company founders Justin Kolbeck and Aria Elfenbein believe that what's on the menu is nothing short of the future of seafood. Thin slices of salmon, not caught in the open ocean or even farmed in captivity, but instead grown in their lab.
I mean,
for me, it was the sort of confluence of, okay, there's this potential.
Why, though?
Well, I
think we already have the inhumane thing, we already have the farm salmon.
Yeah.
What do we need this for?
You know, it's a great question, but I think that people that look at the way we're treating our planet, they realize that it's unsustainable.
Right, but is it unsustainable because we're eating too much salmon, or is it unsustainable because we're polluting everything? The jets are going all over the place, and you know, like, and it's not even all the factories and all the shit that we don't own. It's like all the elites and Amazon, the packages. We don't have any benefit from that. But then it seems like all the solutions are centered around like creating a new business, getting us to buy shit, or restricting our movement or what we can do to fish. Or I think, I don't know if you're going to mention that or not.
Yeah.
But these kinds of things, it seems like that's the solution. It's never like, oh, we'll limit our output. You guys are chill. Like, you know, you guys can't use straws. You have to do these cups that, you know, disintegrate as I'm drinking out of them.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that kind of thing versus like, hey, why don't you stop flying around in the private jet?
Or like what we talked about last week or a couple of weeks ago with the DDT, right? You have these companies that are creating these pesticides or herbicides. And then, you know, EPA finally steps in after 20 years and there's hundreds of thousands of barrels. And they're like, actually, that's killing our planet. And then you have these big corporations that dump it in the ocean and it poisons the fish and it poisons the ocean. I think we have a lot of that stuff going on. And so I think that the more that we continue to pollute our planet through these various ways, and commercial fishing, where we're just like scooping up all the fish and we have windmills in the ocean that are killing the whales and, you know, all these different things, you know, they're probably thinking, okay, well, we'll just placate people by giving them salmon.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm thinking this is the future. I got to go buy a piece of land and start farming my own shit because I'm not going to eat this chemical stuff. Over time, when you look at what margarine did, right? Yeah. I can't believe it's not butter. It's so good for you. And then they're like, heart disease is up 4,000%.
Yeah.
It never usually ends well.
No, they haven't tested this out long term.
But yet they're going to sell it.
Yeah, I don't think
that. And that's the problem.
That is a big problem. I think that the best solution for the environment is to just make shit like last longer. Like you're talking about food, high quality food,
yes,
sustainable food versus like fake food. And the same, it's like, you guys, we just need to stop, you know, making iPhones. There's no reason like we should release an iPhone every 6 months. Like, just make the iPhone last like 5-10 years, because they've been the same basically for 5-10 years anyway.
Yeah,
just do that. And the reason why they can't do that is because then you can't sell shit.
Well, it's like, I don't know if you ever heard this, but years ago, 20 years ago, I heard they've created a light bulb.
Oh, that lasts forever.
That lasts forever.
Yeah.
They purposely give it a shelf life of like 3 months or however long it is.
Yeah, so
one
you have
in
to buy
my
more.
Kitchens are 3 months. So because they want you to keep buying. So it's just profit over people, profit over the environment, profit over animals.
And
we're going to be the ones, you know, eating carbon butter and lab-grown salmon. And
they're getting their real fish. They still have their stockpile of real fish. They're not 100%. They're not eating this lab-grown salmon.
And on that note,
I would like to talk to those guys, though. What about those two founders, right?
Who?
The lab-grown salmon. Are they eating the salmon? Or are they serving that to themselves?
Well, it'd be a great question, right? We need to get them and Bill Gates, put a little butter on it, and be yeah, like, go ahead.
Yeah, here we go.
Bon appetit. But yeah, they are in Canada, in the name of climate change, also keeping people from fishing and going in the woods. This is one of our fellow news creators.
News updates for you.
News updates for you. Look at this video.
Wouldn't it be crazy if the Canadian government is starting to implement climate change lockdowns?
It would be crazy.
We're here. We made it. We knew it was coming. So a couple days ago, Nova Scotia government announces that people are no longer allowed to go hiking, fishing, or camping, with a penalty of up to a $25,000 fine. $25,000. That is 5 times the fine for a DUI. Just saying. Wouldn't it also be crazy, though, if in March of this year, the Nova Scotia government lifted a longtime standing ban on uranium mining? Hello? Obviously, they were doing that because of public pressure, but does anyone feel like we've already lost the war to the machines? Like, we're mining uranium to keep AI technology going, and we're going to kill ourselves to do it. Great idea. Money, because we need money. Well, just about 2 hours ago, New Brunswick, another East Coast province, has now banned people from going in the woods. So get ready. We can't let this slide.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what's going on in Canada. I'm not from there. I don't know what the government is all. I don't really know about Canadian governmental culture, really. Are they being hypocrites by doing this? Is like Justin Trudeau and Mark Carney, like, you know, big fishers and then just preventing everybody else from fishing?
I mean, yeah, I don't know, but I do think, and we have this article here, I do think that it's just reminiscent of the 2021-2020 lockdowns, where the government is saying that we're doing it for your health and we're doing it for your best interest. And really, that's not the case. Because now, of course, in hindsight, we look back at those lockdowns and people became more depressed. There were more drug addicts. Learning for, you know, our young children declined. People became more suicidal. There's all these different things that happened. And now it's just kind of crazy that literally, if you go in the woods, if you camp, if you fish, they are strict fines on this. The ban is being enforced with strict penalties, including fines that could reach up to $25,000 for violations.
But it's cool that homeless people camping all over the place.
Right. So you just wonder with this lab-grown food stuff going out and then different countries that were very, you know, closely aligned. Obviously, there are neighbors, Canada, and we saw what happened with the lockdowns. If different policies will start to be implemented there as kind of a...
testing ground?
Yes.
Because Canadian citizens, from my understanding, I don't know if this is 100% sure, but this is what I've told, they're a bit more trusting of the government still compared to the U.S. So they believe that their government has their best interests. And maybe they do a little bit more than the U.S. I do believe that probably is true because I think there's less corporate influence. I think they have little stricter rules around lobbying and things like that. So I don't know how this is going to be taken. But I think here it's like there's no beating around the bush. I don't think our representatives really represent any people.
No, so no when matter they tell, what country
like if
you're
they tell me
or...
that, oh, we're going to do this because it's better for you, I'm like, bullshit.
Right. I mean... can you imagine if you're just like a grandpa and you're like, come on, son, let's go in the water and cast a reel. And then like cops come out and they're like, down on your knees, sir. And they like put you and grandpa, like, sorry, we went fishing. Like, it's just so crazy. But that's the reality in Canada right now.
And they're saying it's because of forest fires or something like that.
They're saying like, it's in the name of climate change, right? There's too many people in the forests. They could start the fires. So then I have to say, you know, which one is it? Is it the climate is heating up too much and starting these fires? Or is it individuals starting fires in the woods? Like, you have to pick a side. But either way, it just feels like they're trying to take more control away from the people in all of these democracies around the world.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the government's main goal is to try to take as much power as
possible.
I mean,
in the UK, you can't report a meme. You can't say certain things. I don't know if you saw this, but after we talked about that on our show, Dylan Page, one of the number one news creators in the world on TikTok, posted a story and he showed that he got a local ban because he lives in the UK. So the story was actually allowed around the world and had like 3.2 million views, but not in the UK. And he said, I'm leaving. I'm going to leave. I'm going to move to Texas. I'm going to move somewhere else because if the UK's restriction on my content is more than the notoriously strict content policy that TikTok has, I'm out of here. So in all these different ways, you see this stuff happening and it is concerning.
Yeah, don't even get me started on the TikTok censorship, which I'm massively dealing with right now.
You are right now again?
Well, I got a strike yesterday.
Oh.
And, you know, for... I was doing an Epstein story. Whatever.
Yeah.
You know, they don't like that story.
No.
Even though I completely cited a legitimate newspaper.
It doesn't matter. It
doesn't matter.
It does not matter. I'm like a ballerina on TikTok now. I'm just tiptoeing around. Doot, doot, doot. I'm like the sugar plum fairy.
Speaking of which, Epstein, you know, should we dive into this Jewish supremacy for a few minutes before we end the show?
This is James's topic that he wants to go over. So please, let's get into it. This is going to be like the 401k.
All right, so can we all agree that white supremacy is looked down upon in terms of like, we shouldn't be white supremacists? Is that's a general feeling? I think that's a general...
Of course.
Like nobody wants that.
Meaning like white people...
eugenics.
Are better than
actual eugenics. We're saying, hey.
Okay. Yeah. Of course. That's no.
So
I would think the same thing for any race or religion. Yeah.
I 100% agree. And so does the Anti-Defamation League. They have this page where they talk about the no race mixing, which is bad. They say, hey, this is a white supremacist thing. Quote, white supremacists fear and hate the concept of multiracial couples, relationships, or families, believing that such relationships pollute the pure white race. As a result, a fairly common white supremacist symbol depicts a multiracial couple or family with a red circle / bar superimposed over the depiction, indicating that such relationships ought to be prohibited. So this is, ADL is supposedly, they are a civil rights group. So I would expect them to say this.
Yes.
Right? They'd be like, yeah, this is not good. So then the next clip I want you to play, LJ, is the D11. This is the head of the ADL.
Is it your sense that Jewish people are getting complacent, that they're not engaging to degrees and levels we should be?
I have met a lot of October 8th Jews. who, for whom the massacre on October 7th was a wake-up call. I've met a lot of people who feel much more galvanized, much more organized. But that will only be sustained if we offer them, you know, ways to participate in a real and robust way in Jewish life.
Mm-hmm. And whose responsibility is that, in essence?
All of ours.
Yeah.
But, like, this is why we need a revolution in our community on so many levels. So, look, the reality is that intermarriage rates continue to go up. Assimilation continues apace. And, look, I fight anti-Semitism. That is my job.
Right.
But I worry a great deal about broader questions of Jewish identity, as I think we talked about over lunch.
All right. He's sort of insinuating there that it's bad for Jews to be in interracial marriages.
Interracial or out of their religion?
Intermarriage. You use the term intermarriage. So out of the Jewish religion.
Religion.
And culture.
So, you know, that is the same story for every single religion, basically. Every major religion, right? There is scripture in the Quran for Muslims that they should marry other Muslims. There is scripture in the Bible that you should find other Christians. There is this scripture in every single religion that you should find people that are of the belief of your God. Why? Because it will allow you to raise a family and have a household of the same principles and raise your children that way. So I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. Indian Matchmaker is like my favorite show on Netflix. And, you know, they go around and that is all about them, you know, having arranged marriages because they want to have the same religion, the same families. And I think that that is something that people want to protect. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that at all. And I think that, you know, when you look at the Jewish religion, they are the smallest portion of the world population in terms of religion when you compare it to Christians and Muslims. And so why would we be going after them for wanting to have their people continue on and their religion carry on? I feel
I'm
like
not
that,
going after it. I don't disagree with you in that. I think it's fine for Indians to want to be with other Indians and whatever religion, Christian or Catholic, want to marry another Catholic. I don't have any problem with that. The few problems I have with this is, A, he's the head of a civil rights group.
Yeah.
So that's...
But is he talking on behalf of the ADL in that interview? Because he also has his
own... Well, as the head of the ADL, you're talking on behalf of the ADL always. You're not doing a personal interview. Like, the head of the U.S., like, Donald Trump is always speaking on behalf of the United States of America. This is the same thing. And this is the point, is that he's laundering the Jewish culture and religion on behalf of Israel, is my point. He's saying that, hey, if more Jews intermix with non-Jews, they're not going to like Israel as much. And now we're going to have a problem because there's this thing in Jewish culture that, like, they're basically tied to the land of Israel, right? That's, like, the thing that's tying them together. That's, like, one of the key tenets of Zionism.
Well, because it's
the only country. No, America.
What?
America is good for Jews. I know what you're going to say, but go ahead.
Well, it is, like, the largest portion. It's the only Jewish state. It's the only Jewish country in the world, right? There's many Christian countries. There's
America
many Muslim,
is a Jewish country. America
not,
is a country
not as
for
a whole,
everybody.
But really, overall, it's a Christian country. And the reason why Jewish people are concerned about their population and their religion dying off is because of what happened to them in the Holocaust. A lot of these people, I'm sure this guy here, may or may not have had relatives that were killed by Hitler in concentration camps. And so there is this fear that Jewish people have that if we don't, as a culture, collectively make sure that we are protecting our people, other people are not going to protect it. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that either. But he's using Israel and Jews synonymously.
I didn't hear him say that there.
But that's what the point of the organization is. They don't actually care about protecting Jews. So, like, he said his job is, like, protecting or is fighting anti-Semitism, right? And anti-Semitism, according to their own data, has gone up precipitously over the last decade while he's been the head of this organization. So I would say he should lose his job because he's not actually countering anti-Semitism. And this is a bit of a complex topic because my take is that, like, this group exists to, like, further anti-Semitism because they need anti-Semitism in order to justify the existence of a Jewish state. And not a state of equal rights, because he was asked in a different interview, I don't have the clip, but they were basically asking, hey, could Israel be a state for Jews and for Arabs and for Muslims. Is that a thing? Could that be possible?
Well, if you were to go to some Muslim states and ask them the same question, what do you think they would say?
I don't know, but we're not funding those Muslim states. That's my point.
I mean, some of them we have historically.
Historically, because of the oil and everything like that. Yes. And I would also have a problem with that.
I'm just saying, we have historically, and I guarantee you they would say no.
They would say...
No, we're not going to have a Muslim and Jewish state.
Correct, but they also say, and I'm talking about Israel, is that they say we're a democracy. But
you and in many ways they are, right? Like,
but you can't be a democracy and say, like, oh, one religion has like more rights than other religions.
Well,
you can't have like a second-class citizenship for non-Jews as a democracy.
And there's a lot of different religions that live in Israel, and I don't think that they would say that they're second-class citizens.
There's like roads that you can go on and you can't go on depending on your religion.
Well, it's like a fast track if you're Jewish in Israel.
It's like an apartheid situation where there are certain roads, like in the West Bank, for example, only Jews can go on that road. And if you're a Palestinian, you have to go on a different road.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is they keep trying to tie us to the same thing, but we're not. LJ, do you have a clip? What is this clip here?
The national symbol of Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, is a sword. That's what's on their flag. The national symbol of Israel is the shield. It's the Star of David. The symbol of our people is not a weapon of war. It's an instrument of defense. The thing that most embodies our entire ethos is not harming others. It's, again, creating a better world. This is fundamental to our tradition for thousands of years. And so the idea that our national anthem would be the Hatikva, would be the hope, it's the Israel's national anthem.
Okay. All right, you can pause. So he sort of Freudian slipped there that he's Israeli. So that's my whole problem with this project is that they don't actually represent Jewish people. They just represent Israeli Jews.
So here's my thing.
And so he's supposed to be ADL. This is an American civil rights group. And he's multiple times saying our national anthem, our symbol, as if he was Israeli.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
Well, I think that it's the homeland for many Jewish people, right? And so it's their Mecca. And so they are going to be wanting to defend it. And when they saw what happened on October 7th, having grandparents that were taken to concentration camps, that triggers something in that population that, oh my God, they're after us again. And you and I don't know what that's like. And when you talk about Israel being a democracy, it is. When you look at Iran or Hezbollah or Hamas, and you look at the way even in Iran, women aren't allowed. I wouldn't be allowed to be saying what I'm saying in Iran. And I have a sister-in-law that's from Iran. They don't have rights there. And obviously, as a woman in Israel, you do. I think that I think that times and this subject is just so sticky and there's a no-win situation here because obviously I am somebody who voted for President Trump because I didn't want to continue funding wars in other countries. I did not want to give another cent to Ukraine. I didn't want to give another cent to the Middle East. And so what you're seeing now is you are seeing President Trump and this administration continuing to give money to Israel. And ahead of other things that Americans would need, I think that Israel is a sacred place for Jewish people. And I think that that is very important to the Jewish population. And it is something that needs to be protected. But that doesn't mean that they shouldn't be able to do that on their own. And of course, rely on their allies. But I understand with what you're saying, where it gets muddied because so many of our politicians take money from these different organizations. So it's just like a very tough situation.
It's not ideal. It's not an ideal situation. I think there's, what I'm saying is I think there's bad faith actors in this whole.
I think there's bad faith actors in everything.
Yeah, but I think the head of these things, these groups like the ADL, who have a lot of influence and power over the media and all these things, they are acting in bad faith in that they don't actually care about the protection of Jews. And I can name a number of examples of this group just kind of allowed, you know, people in Charlottesville to chant like death to the Jews or whatever they're talking about. The Jews will not replace us. They didn't really have a problem with it. They just let that happen. But as soon as like students were protesting on college campuses against Israel, they're like, we got to send in the national. We got to shut this down. And to me, that doesn't make any sense because one is actually calling for the extinction of your religion and culture. Another is just protesting the actions of a government that is, I think everybody can agree on, is like basically like killing civilians on purpose.
It's difficult because, just like you were saying, he doesn't necessarily always represent his people properly. Either does RFK Jr. with the MAHA movement, like we were talking about with the glyphosate and the lab-grown salmon and the butter. A lot of these different heads of corporations or states don't necessarily have the people's interest in mind, and that's not the reason that they're in power, and that's the problem across the board. But like you said, anti-Semitism has gone up over the last 10 years, and I think that that is wrong, because I think that people that are ill-educated are, you know, looking at what's going on in Gaza, and they are blaming a group of people that have their religion and their religious beliefs because of what maybe Benjamin Netanyahu is doing. And there needs to be that distinction there.
I agree. I think they need to make a distinction, but he's saying that there's no distinction. Being anti-Semitic and being anti-Zionist is basically the same thing.
Yes, but I feel like bringing up the fact that like a Jewish person wants their people to continue to create.
I don't have a problem with that.
Yes, but
I only have a problem in the context. It's not because of the Jewish religion and culture and how special it is and all their tradition and customs. No, it's like, oh, I'm worried that there's going to be less supporters for Israel. Like, you could have a perfectly robust Jewish community here in America, which we do, and it's beautiful, but that's not enough. That's not the point of that organization.
And I think that when you look at the overall population of Jewish people, it is such a small percentage of our population, which is why, you know, when you look back at history and how they were prosecuted, why people want to stand up for the state and the people to make sure that nothing like that happens again.
Maybe I just disagree with his tactics. Because I think that the way he's going about it, there can be no other result other than people hating Jews.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I don't want that.
No.
Just for the record. Yes. I don't think you want it. I don't want it.
I definitely,
I'm just saying the way he's prosecuting this case is only going to make people more anti-Semitic. And maybe that's the point. And this is where my conspiracy brain comes in and say, hey, the ADL has a nice building in New York. I've been there. I've shot a little documentary there. And it costs millions of dollars to run it. And how do you get those millions of dollars? Is because anti-Semitism exists. Without anti-Semitism, that organization can't fundraise.
Interesting.
So if he actually does his job, the same with the homeless situation, right? If you actually do your job and you house people and there's no more homelessness, you don't get to rake in that fat salary. In this situation, it's the same. There's an industrial complex to create anti-Semitism so that he gets to maintain power.
I'd have to look into that more because I haven't. So I can't just say like that's the case. But I see what you're saying. In the clip that I saw, I think that he was just, you know.
Well, he admitted that he was an Israeli citizen.
Well, whatever it may be, I just don't think there's anything. And I know you don't either. Wrong with, you know, it's the same thing in every religion.
Yeah.
You want to marry within your own religion because you want to continue on those traditions.
Yeah, there's a bond there.
There's a bond and there's history and it's the legacy of your lineage.
Yeah.
And I think that's beautiful personally. So, but
same. And I'm going to get clipped out of context and I'm going to be a huge anti-Semite, even though like,
well,
what I'm saying is
you're editing. So don't clip yourself out.
No, other people will edit what I'm not editing anything.
Oh no, I meant for our clips.
So, I mean, this is, fun topic, of course.
Yes,
but people were talking about. I chose the other people are. This is like huge online, so I wanted to make sure that we address, because I think it is important at this stage in like the war, at this stage in like American culture, Jewish culture. Like it's important to like distinguish between what's good for Israel and what's good for Jewish people abroad.
Yeah, and I think ultimately, even though there's all of this stuff going on in Gaza, which is wrong, people need to really do their research and make sure that they are not lumping Jewish people in with being pro, you know, Gaza. And people need to do their research because anti-Semitism is on the rise. And I have friends that are Jewish and I don't want them to, you know, fear for their life because of the past and everything that is going on around the world. I think that that's wrong. And I feel like on this platform, it's important that I also stand up for them as much as we're standing up for like the babies being killed in Gaza. Everybody should, you know, everybody that's a good person and is doing the right thing needs to have people standing up for them, you know?
100%. I mean, for the record, I also believe wholeheartedly that I am standing up for their community. I'm just doing it in a different way.
Yeah.
To point out, I just think that his way is not a good way.
Yeah.
My way is a better way.
Okay. Well, let us know in the comments.
Yes. No. Really quick, 2 minutes left. Do you want to touch on the National Guard being deployed in D.C. or no?
I mean, I don't really look.
I would like to get your commentary on whether or not this is a good idea, or is this Trump just distracting from the Epstein files?
That's a good question. My grandma passed away yesterday, as you know. And so I have not done my due diligence on reading about what's going on with the National Guard in D.C. But I will say from the little bit of research that I've done and a phone call that I made, I have heard it's illegal. So I don't know.
I think it is legal.
I've heard.
Oh, I heard it was legal.
I heard it was illegal. From a former federal judge.
Some Home Act or something like that.
So, yeah, but if you have a clip, I mean,
I don't have a clip, but I think they, based on the analysis that I've seen, they're saying this has much more legal grounding than him deploying the National Guard in LA.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know.
Because DC is interesting because DC is not a state. It has like special rules where like the federal government can kind of impose their will because it's like a special district.
Yeah.
So they can do this. The reason they're doing this, I'm not really sure, because some people are saying the crime is actually coming down and this is just sort of like his way of imposing his might and distracting from the Epstein
files.
And so
he is doing this because he said the crime is super high, right?
Yes.
Because I've seen some charts circulating around and it's like DC is way above.
Yeah, DC is high.
Yeah.
Relative to maybe if you compare it to other municipalities around the world, it's high, but then it's coming down. So it's like, okay.
But where does it stack up next to Chicago?
I think it's probably similar. Lower.
Oh, really?
I think probably similar.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know that. So, I don't know.
And we may need to fact check that at some point.
But I do think it's funny that he was, like, I saw a tweet or a Truth Social or something that he said, the homeless need to leave D.C. Like, where are they going to go?
Well, that's my thing is, like, yes, I do agree, like, the homelessness needs to be cleaned up and everything like that. But, like, how do you do that?
There needs to be a solution. It can't just be like, okay, move out to the desert. You know what I mean? I don't know.
So I'm not the biggest fan of this, even though I can understand, because I don't like crime in any city.
No, I agree with that 100%. It's bad.
But then how do you do it? Is it just brute force? Is it like, because to me that, I've seen some images coming out of DC and it's just a bunch of like military people walking around all over the place, right?
Right.
And that just reminds me of when I was visiting China and it was just like a bunch of police everywhere. Like there's no crime happening, but there's also a bunch of police.
There's a reason why there's no crime happening.
There's cameras all over the place and there's police walking around in every block. So like, is that the society that we want?
Well, I've said this to you before, I think in private, but like Dubai, for example, women have very rich area. Women have Birkin bags, right? $10,000, $20,000 bags. They can take their kids to the park. They leave their bag. They can go get a coffee. They never worry that anybody's going to steal the bag because they know that their laws, if someone steals the bag, they're getting their freaking hand chopped off.
Yeah.
And I do think that if you had some laws like that, that's not really that bad of a thing, right? Like, my mom went to a consignment store the other day and she in Calabasas of all places, very nice area, and found out that 5 masked guys went in there, by the way, next to an Erewhon, went in there and robbed all of the jewelry. Like,
not ideal,
but it's just ridiculous. Crime has gotten out of control in the last 5 years, 10 years. And so I do think something needs to be done. And the question is, why has crime gotten so out of control? Are people stealing more because they can't afford to live? What is the reason? But either way, that should not be the way you go, right?
I would agree with you. Well, let us know what your thoughts are, right? Down below.
Don't you think that we should implement the hand chopping in the United States?
That's a contract. I'm going to just, that's a clip right there.
I think we should.
But anyways, we appreciate everybody for listening today.
Oh.
What's up?
I want to do a shout out to our new founding father, Stella, on Patreon. And we have not given our Patreon members really anything yet. James and I are just still getting this thing up and going. But we did film a really exciting interview last Friday that we're going to be releasing on our Patreon 3 to 5 days before. It's going to be out on YouTube. And we're doing another one Thursday that's going to be released early as well. And some behind the scenes stuff. So
yeah, we really appreciate
coming, and we love you, Stella. Thank you
so
much. We do.
We really appreciate everybody's support, because I didn't know, honestly, maybe I thought I did, but then, you know, running a podcast is actually quite difficult. There's a lot of shit that goes in.
I was used to doing my TikTok lives. Yeah. Like, my level was like setting up a ring light and like a mic and then just going.
Yeah.
So it's a full production, but we're getting the hang of it.
Getting the hang of it. So really, really appreciate it. Like, the early supporters being there for us is like so critical.
100%. And we're going to get those mugs made and sent to you. So be ready.
Thank you guys so much. Subscribe on YouTube. That could be, if you don't have the money to give, totally fine. That's the biggest thing you can do for us. Subscribe, watch us. Wherever you want.
Like,
Spotify.
Comment, share.
Exactly.
And let us know what you think about all of this down below.
Thanks, everybody.